Okay, go ahead.
January 1st. Yeah, I did it again. July 14th, 2022. Planning Commission commissioners present tonight are Matt Cochran, Elena Hughes, Tina Carlson, Shelley Price Gibson, and that's it, right?
That's
Shelley is sitting in, I think, for either John or Colleen. And Peg Smith, clerk. And yeah. Is the ZA here or is that it?
There's a phone number here that I don't know who it is.
Okay, it could be John. I think he said he might listen in at least. Maybe not.
Okay.
But
John is here.
Okay.
Okay.
And John Varanth will add to the commissioners then. So first item on the agenda is approving the agenda. So let's see, all those in favor of approving the agenda I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
Okay, any discussion on that? Okay, all those in favor of approving the agenda, Matt Cochran, aye.
Aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
Shelley Gibson, aye.
John, are you going to be voting this round or not? Are you?
Shelley can vote.
I'm going to let Shelley take the voting position.
Shelley can vote regardless because we're also missing Colleen.
Okay, then I will vote yes.
Thank you. Okay, second item of business is approving the June minutes. So I'll make a motion to approve the June minutes.
I'll second it, Tina Carlson.
Is there any discussion or changes that anyone noticed that needs to be made? All right, then all those in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Aye. Tina Carlson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
John, aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so some context for tonight. We don't have any, quote, public business tonight. So where we're going to be focusing is on what we started last month, and that's on sort of review and assessment of the information that we've each been gathering, primarily on housing issues, fire protection, and setting up an open forum for early fall. So to do that, where I want to start with is the general plan. The question that we came up with last month was, or it's been over several months, is how well are we doing in addressing the issues of the 2019 general plan? So I don't know if you can put that up, Peg, or it might not be totally necessary, but I did the initial review on that. So I'm just going to give my 2 cents and I'd like to hear from the commission. So
Matt, it's actually, it's the 2021 version that was.
Oh, thank you.
Most recent. I'm just about to share the screen right here. Go ahead.
So with the general plan, I think it's important to note that there's a vision and there's a goal, and there's it's important to, you know, the difference between those two. The vision obviously is sort of the way we're, the trajectory we're trying to head towards. And, you know, in the vision itself, you know, there are, I'm waiting for you to throw it up.
There, I see it. Do you have it yet?
Yeah. Can you scroll back up to the top? Yeah, there, perfect. So primary objectives versus secondary objectives. So, the overall vision, I think we understand small scale agricultural, keeping the rural frontier spirit of Boulder, quiet, independent lifestyle, that sort of thing, clean water. noise down, all that sort of stuff. The secondary objectives include supporting an economically viable future. I think it's important to note that the secondary features need to fit in to the primary, okay? Next is the goals, and the goals are, you know, sort of what's gonna steer us towards that vision. I found it interesting that, you know, without a lot of detail in this, there's obviously some contradiction. We want to keep open space, open agricultural, and we do also want to provide affordable housing. I can't see what number that is, and so on. So it occurred to me that, you know, and perhaps it's obvious to you all, how we go forward is how to balance this line very carefully. And keep it all in mind and not just get hyper-focused on one thing. I think on the level of living up to our vision and goals, we have a lot of work to do. And although we're definitely moving in that direction, and I think that's very positive, it's complicated. And then finally, I'll wait till I get to the housing on that. That's the basics. How I'm curious about what the rest of the commission sees, saw, comments in that. Anyone dare to launch in?
This is Elena. I guess the main challenge I see is I think we're going to be really creative on how to think about how to have affordable housing and maintain agriculture. And I think one of the things we found when we've talked about this and taken surveys and stuff is that the people who are looking for housing and land ownership would like to do small scale agriculture. So that's, you know, where the land prices and the zoning and the goals kind of all are going to have a hard time agreeing with each other. I think we're just going to have to think creatively. I think there's a solution. I
just
think you have to be creative.
Great. Yeah, and I agree. And that reminded me too that one of the main things in the vision too was promoting full-time residency and, and not only small-scale agriculture, but cottage industry and really, you know, towards sort of keeping a local scene rather than a second homeowner resort type of scene. Charlie, Tina, or John, any comments on general plan?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you.
I really agree. Everything we do as a planning commission involves balancing, because anything we do is going to create winners and it's going to create losers. And what we need to do is balance things for the community. I think what Lee Nellis has helped point out is the inconsistency that our current 1-5 acre zoning is at current land prices very inconsistent with a lot of the goals. And I think that's the sort of thing that we do have to look at, is what are the unintended consequences of one action and how a different action might be making better opportunities. So I think we're right. You're putting us right on the track, Matt, with what you brought up.
And I agree with you there, John, and that, you know, we'll go into that more in housing. The difficulty that we're faced with as a community is that the way the zoning is set up right now is that most likely it's in some ways geared towards second home ownership and infilling all these agricultural areas. And that's the dilemma that we need to sort through and figure out. I think it's also important to note that when it comes to affordable housing, although it seems like this giant issue, it has to be kept into the scale of what Boulder is right now. It's not like we need tons of it, right? And so I think that's really important to keep in mind as we go forward through the rest of the year in this discussion.
Very true. I think, how to put it, one remark I've made is that if you combine our zoning size with our very restrictive sensitive lands ordinance and the lot shape parts, what our ordinance makes real easy is to take good flat agricultural land and chop it up into squares. That's the one thing that's unquestionably legal under our ordinances. That's doing exactly what we don't want, which is taking good agricultural land and converting it to second homes with a house on the, right in the center of the 5 acres so you can't irrigate anymore. So that I think is part of what we need to look at. I think in terms of how much housing we need, you know, I think part of it should be that we should be doing some surveys. We do have some data and things like the Garfield County Affordable Housing Plan that gives us some ideas we can prorate, you know. But, you know, we're not, you're right, we're not talking hundreds of houses, even 20s of houses. But, you know, whether it's 5 or 10, I don't know what our demand is for affordable housing. And I think some surveying of the community, either structured or informally, is going to help put some numbers on that.
Right. And we'll get a little deeper into this in the next discussion on the housing, but I think it's also important to state out loud that Lee Nellis discussed there really, it's not just affordable housing for seasonal workers, but also the younger people who do want to, who are already working here, but can't afford to stay here long-term. So that's two different sort of issues in a housing issue in a way.
Can I add another thing?
Please.
The other part of housing too is to maybe figure out how to ensure that there's a way for teachers and people who have, plumbers and electricians and firemen can actually be also somehow given access to kind of housing.
Great. So I think this is just the broad overview, and I think that we can sort of segue into a review of the housing discussion that both, you know, John, you, Tina, and Lee Nellis all commented on. And so there are a bunch of different documents there. I think I want to start with Varanth's document, John's. And I suppose if it's okay, John, I'll comment first. I thought your paper was very thorough and very complete and really well laid out, and I appreciate that. And I found it really interesting on one level that, let's see, let me get my notes. You know, the discussion, I was looking at the report and the discussion between low and moderate income housing in Garfield County. I think moderate income housing was something like $336,000 and rent was somewhere between $600 and $1,000. And, you know, I saw moderate housing addressed, and what I've seen here in the last few years is, you know, maybe Boulder can hit that, but low, for to hit a low income housing, it's really going to need some sort of outside funding and help that way. You know, John, you mentioned in that thing, the three things we sort of need to, or a way forward, which would be something to offer to see what the community thinks of, is how, we don't have to answer it tonight, but how do we create, and do we create higher density clustering, or as Lee calls it, open space development with deed restriction, which sort of ensures that it stays on some level to local ownership. I think those are all valuable things to follow out and to hear from the public on at some point in the housing forum. And finally, you know, I think, as a strategy or a way forward for the PC over the next few months is I think it would be valuable to come up with a few tracks and trajectories, possible ways to go at this, to present to the public. So we're not just flailing, trying to figure out what way to go, but we actually have distinct directions to sort of choose from because we've done the research on it. So those are my comments on your housing paper, John. Anyone else? So specifically Planning Commission comments on John's housing review. And John, of course, if you have anything to add, that'd be great too. You all should just launch in. We need to hear from everybody. It'd be great.
Tina, you brought up that housing report from 2018, and I think that's got some real good ideas. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, the process in 2018, what was done, what was concluded, and maybe why we've lost momentum since then.
Sure. I think, you know, we have done quite a bit along those, along that report, including, you know, limiting the short-term rentals and putting in the idea of an RV cart option. Although I don't think we put in anything that, if I might be wrong, but I didn't remember that there was any kind of long-term or, you know, monthly option to have someone who could stay there for a season in an RV park or encouraged to do that, but I guess it's going on anyway. Let's see. The clustering that we would like not to, what would like to define in a different way is definitely economically more feasible for someone to actually develop lots if they wanted to. And I think that Tom mentioned that that could possibly be in a performance level, which I think that's one of the options we should actually research more on, identifying what would we would consider, you know, an affordable development that we would want to encourage. What else was in there? There was a mention of possibly allowing for some kind of up to four kind of a building that has four living or residences in it, so that, you know, basically looks like a one residential piece of property, but actually could be four residences.
Right, like I think he noted, like Good Graces there. Right. Blake's employee housing is an example of that.
Good Graces is basically one residence with one kitchen, one, you know, that's how they set that one up, which this would be more like a fourplex kind of setup.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I think that. So I think, you know, deciding what kind of development is actually appropriate for sort of a smaller lot with that idea of having the agricultural land be somehow part of the conservation easement or something like that within that would maybe be something that people could be interested in.
Great, yeah. And I think too, and I don't quite understand this, and without Lee here, maybe someone else, another commissioner does, but how would the performance standards work versus changing the zoning? Is it one or the other, or do you have to do both, or how, you know, that was my question, because I think that is a good route to go. It would be you know, with a little work on our end, it would be easily definable, but I'm not able to quite follow the details on how that would play out.
I think it would be, my understanding, it would be more like a conditional use
kind of
thing. I mean, that, but again, I think zoning is probably also going to be, need to be identified as places that maybe we consider some value of some, where certain things would be more appropriate than others.
Right, like in Dan and Jennifer's letter where they sort of noted specific places to talk about. Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, and the other thing that wasn't brought into these discussions, by the way, was, but it was on the, again, the housing look, I think from 2019, I can't remember whose document, I think it was referenced on your article, John, or maybe it was in the general plan in the housing thing, but it said there are 238, this is 2019, there are 238, you know, registered or known residences or buildings, residences in Boulder, 44% of them are vacant on one level. And so I still have, you know, there's building new things and setting up for development to come, but there's also how do we incentivize long-term rentals in all this empty housing around here? That's a question that I think is important to follow out.
Can you say that number again of how many dwellings there were?
238 residences and 44% vacancy, whether second home ownership or other, I suppose.
Is that from what Shayla put together?
No, I think it was on John's document. He had a website on there that I can't remember.
Oh, really? I couldn't find that on that document. So
or it may have been. Yeah, I'm looking.
Okay.
Any other comments? Shelley, Elena, John.
This is Elena. I see creating some type of affordable housing as being really tricky, obviously, but I am a little more interested in kind of finding ways to incentivize what we want to see in town, like you're talking about, and maybe find ways to promote people renting out a room in their house long term, kind of using all that, renting out their second home they're not in all the time, finding ways to use the housing that we already have here in terms of seasonal rentals. But then there's always the discussion of land ownership and how is that feasible.
I think our, you know, sort of our job tonight is identifying these different pathways and then bringing them all to the table to follow them out more deeply as to if they're actually possible.
This is John. Sorry, I dropped the call there. One thing I think that there are a good number of names of resource people. Colleen, I think, mentioned some of them who've been involved in the past or the people who were somewhat involved in 2018. I think one thing we should be thinking about is who we can invite who have expertise, especially people who could talk about the projects, for example, that took place in Tropic and Escalante, because I think those are something that people in Boulder can relate to. Well, I think that, so one of the things we should be thinking about is not so much trying to come up with solutions ourselves within the commission as who we want to invite to help educate us.
Agreed. And here's a question too about that, John, and I know this is sort of jumping ahead, because part of our discussion tonight is actually starting to organize with dates and so on, the open forum on this. You know, how much can we do in one open forum, so actually I want to set that for ahead, but I want to say noted. I think that's, you know, a really valid point, because we need everyone, all of us, the public included, needs more information that way from people who are actually doing this in other towns like Torrey, Escalante.
Yeah, I think in terms of the first public meeting, this is going to take a long series of meetings to build community solutions. But I think it would be wonderful if we could have somebody give a slide presentation of successful projects elsewhere and talk about, you know, what worked, what didn't work, what problems they encountered, how they dealt with the problems. So I think the first forum should be as much educating people about what's possible rather than a listening session to what are people's concerns.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think we need to systematize. There are going to be concerns. I know things that will be brought up. And I think what part of it is having a dialogue and educating people and diffusing the concerns. So I think it's like what Tom mentioned. He came up with a drawing of a fourplex that would blend in and look no more intrusive than any ranch house like Kelly Roundy's house. I think that's the kind of thing we need to be showing people so that the pictures in their minds are things that are bolder scale and bolder appropriate.
Right. So does, you know, what other avenues as the PC do you all see that we need to bring to that table that we may have not talked about yet? I mean, right now, this is a little bit off the cuff, but, you know, I'm looking at the things that came from our review and all these, you know, different works are performance standards, you know, bringing in people from community housing, in community housing projects outside of here for funding. We're looking at how to incentivize vacant long-term, you know, housing and long-term rentals that are already here. We're looking at density clustering and deed restriction options. Is there anything else that we need to follow out or bring to the table?
I think the Rural Affordable Land Trust is something I'd like to look into as far as presenting it as an option. It's basically allows a land trust to have to actually put some stipulations on what a piece of property ends up being. And it's not only that, it's like,
that's the sort of the community trust thing that you talked about a bit in your paper, Gina.
Right, and then there's the other idea of the idea of having that possibility of a piece of property that's divided or leased out to people for long term, or that they can pass on, or so they don't have to buy the land, but they actually can build on the land as an option. I think.
Oh, it's like a lease option or something like that. Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to write community trust down as like a rabbit trail to go down as well. Well, maybe not a rabbit trail, but a trail. Okay. Any other thoughts at the moment? Before we end, just so you know where we're going after this discussion, we're going to sort of sidestep into fire protection for a little bit and then circle back around and start looking at how to manifest this open forum house in the fall so we can get hear the public and get everyone involved. So as far as assessing the housing information we did gather and your review of it this month, is there any additional things that haven't been talked about that you want to address?
I'm wondering if there are some specific questions that we should direct to Lee Nellis and say that, you know, at the next meeting, we'd like him to be, you know, to talk about those in detail. One that comes to mind is just some information about how deed restrictions work to create a housing. And the term I prefer is locally accessible housing, because many seasonal workers do actually stay around the area or want to stay around the area. People who came here as seasonal workers often end up raising families. So it's really housing that's accessible to locals, whether it's rental or purchase. But anyway, for Lee to talk to us about how deed restrictions work. Another one that Lee could talk to us about is some examples of successful projects that we can look to as a vision, as a on the ground facts of what we might take as a Boulder vision.
Okay.
Adapt.
I think that's great, John. Also, the question of like, what would performance standards look like for something like this as well would be another thing to throw his way. Let's see, Tina, will you pursue community housing then? The community trust.
Sure.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm splitting it in the middle a little bit, but let's jump into, let's switch gears a little bit here and jump into the fire protection, which John mainly steered here. And again, well done. And my question here, John left us sort of three options of ways to go about this. But my question here is with option three, which is the detailed version of, you know, really making the full changes, again, we're at a contradiction, because if we do all the fire restrictions now, then it becomes even harder to subdivide and create affordable land. And so I don't have an answer, but I'm weighing these two things. And I'm curious for, you know, everyone else's comments on reading through that document and sort of where you're leaning towards. I don't know if you can throw it up there, Peg, but it was, there was a, you know, take no action sort of option. There was a second one, which would just restrict for temporarily or in the short term, new subdivisions would have to be within, you know, 500 feet of a hydrant or something like that. And then the third one was quite detailed, which dealt with all the road issues and up to Utah Wildlands Fire Code and so on.
You know, I'm unable to do that. I'm not at my home machine, so I don't have access to that file. I don't know, Tina, I think I sent that to you earlier on your other.
And I was just looking for it, and all of a sudden I can't.
I may be able to share it.
Yeah. If you have it, Matt, you are able to share. Just do a start share.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Let's see. Where do I go to start share?
At the bottom where it says share screen, it's green, right?
Okay, then it picks it, right?
Yeah, if you've opened the file, it'll display there.
Thank you. Hold on, I'll be right with you on it.
Sorry, I thought I had all my files with me and I don't.
Okay, here it's coming online, I think.
Yeah, I have it.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so John gives us a background and I'm scrolling through that. Then alternatives for planning consideration, no action alternative, the minimum change where you defer the changes until we can address them in a comprehensive revision of the subdivision ordinance. And then number three is quite detailed, dealing with water storage hydrants, dealing with the fire access roads and so on. And he gives the implications of each of those alternatives. So again, I'm trying to figure out what the right balance is for right now. And it's not, I don't think we need to have a vote on this tonight. I'd like to have a discussion on it to know which way we're leaning and how to go forward. As I said, I'm sort of in the middle. I'm leaning towards number two at the moment with wanting to do a comprehensive change with the right timing down the line.
Well, I think that the town is pushing this a little more than on their side, they're pushing this a little more. And I would say that part of me wants to include the town council in this immediately and just say, look, these are the reasons why we feel whatever, maybe we all have to decide which one we're leaning towards and then let the town council know what our three options look like.
Yeah. And that question again, I think, which is really important is that, you know, especially the third one is really going to affect the discussion that we're also tasked with, which is an affordable housing situation, right? And I don't know how to come clean with that or balance that well, so.
So the third one, which is up on the screen here. I mean, I guess it's mostly just the fact that we're actually saying it's either hydrants or some kind of tank capacity. Is that what everybody else is reading?
Yeah, but it's also upscaling the roads, having separate, you know, two ways in and out, and up to the International Fire Code, Utah Wild Urban Interface Code thing. So there's quite a bit more infrastructure that would be required for any subdivision going in, which also will raise the cost significantly, which will be put on then the buyers or the developer themselves. So, what do the rest of you think about that?
Matt?
John?
A little clarification. Okay, so option two simply makes a very small change, but it removes discretion from our current ordinances. Basically, our current ordinances say you have to be within so far from a hydrant when feasible, and by deleting that, that's only affecting subdivisions, option two. Option three is looking much more at the questions that have come up in some of the other projects recently. Do we want to be encouraging houses that are being built half a mile back from the road with no consideration of fire safety? And Pete's remark was, you know, we probably don't want to deal with fire protection, houses being built on existing lots right now. That was Pete's remark.
I pass that on without any further judgment. But yeah, you are totally right, Matt, that requiring fire protection is going to raise the cost of subdivision, but it's also going to encourage clustering. Your cost, if you figure out the size of a 10-acre lot, the requirement to be within, I always have to get confused, it's a little confusing because different codes in different editions have had 400, 500, and 600 feet. But in any case, with the size of a 10-acre, a 5-acre lot, you split 10 acres into two lots, you're probably going to have to put in a hydrant to reach the second lot, unless you're really lucky in terms of being along a road and having the hydrant right on the lot line. So what I do question if we're trying to preserve open agricultural space and discourage second homeowners, I don't think we want to be encouraging sprawl. So it may be a collateral benefit of being stricter on fire protection that it's encouraging clustering, encouraging building the houses near the road where they can have municipal water, where the power lines aren't so long, where hydrants are available, where the lengths of roads are more reasonable. Because Pete brought up, hydrants are only one component of fire protection. Having an all-weather road that isn't a sand pit in the summer or a mud hole in winter is just is much more important in terms of the fire department being able to respond.
Right.
And yes, the two issues are very closely linked.
Yeah. So, you know, given what Tina said about involving the town council, before we go into drafting ordinance on this, John, I wonder if it'd be worthwhile if you would maybe take on discussing it with the mayor, or I think Elizabeth, our liaison, to see what direction the town council, I assume they're pushing for three, but I don't know. But does that?
I'd say, Jim, possible?
Yeah.
I'd be delighted to make that presentation that I just did to the town council. I think, what Jim Campbell had brought up was basically being strict on the distance from hydrants in subdivisions, which is option two. But you're right, this is a very political decision. As planning, our role, I see it, is being the technical people who look at the issues, get the facts organized, but the town council are the elected officials who have to make the decision.
Right. Okay.
So I would be happy to ask Judy if I could be on the agenda for next month's town council meeting.
Great. I appreciate that. Thank you. I think that will save us time in the end from going a direction that they might not want to take. So any other comments on fire protection from the commissioners?
I have a question for John. Is it Elena? John, for option number two, where we strike where feasible from that chart, would that mean, so that chart that talks about fire hydrants for subdivisions is under a table called standards for all proposed streets. Would that, since we recently decided that subdivisions of four or less lots, four or fewer lots, could be accessed by a driveway rather than a street, would that only apply to subdivisions of over four lots if it's in that section?
Right now, the only, I missed a few words there because of some echoing. Right now, putting personalities aside, what Jim Campbell was arguing was that we should meet fire code on distance from hydrants, which is really separate from the road's distance. Because the exception we made was the private driveways was an exception to the developing the streets that our subdivision ordinance requires. But in addition to our subdivision ordinance, there are some fire access road standards in the fire code, in the wildland urban interface code, which the town has adopted. So I'm not sure I'm answering the question because I'm not sure I understood what your question was.
Sure, I can repeat it in a different way. So the in your second suggestion where it strikes where feasible, the place where it says where feasible is in a table about subdivision streets. That's really the only place in our subdivision ordinance that mentions fire hydrants specifically with a distance from the lot. What I'm wondering is, now that we've determined that subdivisions with four or fewer lots can be accessed by a driveway rather than a street, does this, if we change that, does this fire hydrant thing in the street table only apply to subdivisions that need streets, meaning subdivisions with
That certainly was not my understanding of the intent that Jim Cadwell was conveying, but I'm not going to put words in his mouth either. But I would say, you know, to me, the hydrant exemption is a decision. How safe do we want to be, and what burden do we want to impose on home builders in order to have a community, an acceptable level of community fire protection? So to me, whether a subdivision has two houses or four houses, still the issue is, do we have adequate fire protection? And I do try to remind people, there's really three issues in water supply for firefighting. You've got what they call initial attack and flame front control. That's basically knock the fire down so you can evacuate the building. Second one is having enough water to actually put out a major structural fire. And as Pete says, in most cases, that's not going to happen anyway just because of the response times. The third one is when you've got wildfire encroaching on residences. If you don't have water near the residence, it's going to limit the ability to protect those residences from wildfire. So those are really three separate issues. What I based most of my research on was looking at what Eastern Summit County is doing, because they have a lot of subdivisions and isolated houses being built up in the adjacent to the National Forest. So they have similar problems in terms of what's allowed and what's going to be required to protect a structure like that. So that was sort of where I got most of those ideas. So I think to get back to go ahead.
I interrupted. Are you done, John?
Yeah, you go ahead. And I guess the only remark I was going to make is that I think my intent was that if the town council were to so decide, we would clarify that for building a new subdivision, feasibility or hydrants are an absolute standard, not a where feasible standard. In other words, if you can't get a hydrant to the lot, close enough to the lot, then you can't subdivide. That would be a political choice for the town council to make.
And that distance right now is what?
You know, without having the documents in front of me, I believe it is 500 feet in the code that Boulder has adopted. There are actually two national fire codes, and one was revised, which changed the distance. So I have to look at that carefully.
Can I add something?
Yes,
I'm done.
That'd be great.
This is Peter. The codes and stuff. The code doesn't address lots and fire hydrants. It addresses buildings and fire hydrants. So a building needs to be either 500 or 600 feet from a fire hydrant to meet code.
Is it 500 or 600 feet?
It depends on which version of the code you're talking about.
Gotcha.
But the Boulder ordinance says within 400 feet of a lot.
Okay.
It's a different thing. And even that might not meet the, you know, when you build a house on a lot, you may not, you know, you may be more than 600 feet from the house if the hydrant is 400 feet from the lot. I just wanted to make that clarification.
Great, appreciate that. Thank you. Well, Elaine, I don't know if that answers your question, but it seems like there are a few ways to interpret it at this point.
So basically what we're saying is that Boulder Farmstead Water Company is our source of hydrant or any kind of fire protection for the town. I'm just wondering, are we limiting, you know, the other options that might be available to somebody who says, well, I'll put in a tank or I'll, you know, have some kind of other source of water. Or I'm building so that, you know, sprinkler system is going to come in and I'm building my house with materials that aren't as flammable, or, you know, I just wonder if we're being limited in what people can do for fire.
Well, right. I guess that's my question to you, John. Does one, two, or three option address that?
What's that? Okay, I'm unmuted now. Okay, so the option three refers to a standard NFPA, I think 1142, which specifically addresses the type of situation that was just mentioned, private water tanks and so forth. That would be an option for Boulder to officially adopt that. It's there basically as advice anyway. But the question, if somebody wants to say, well, I, instead of hooking up, running a line from Boulder Farmstead, I want to put into a private tank, then immediately the question comes, well, what standard does Pete use to decide whether that's adequate before he signs off on that? And again, the town would have the option of adopting NFPA 1142, which is for rural fire protection of isolated buildings.
Gotcha.
Or the town could take option one and not do anything. But, you know, I think that's why I brought put that one on the table, is that there is a objective standard that does specifically address fire protection. It's actually quite close to what was done up on Black Boulder Mesa.
Right.
That they do have small private tanks and hydrants that are going to be adequate for that initial response and maybe putting out a small brush fire. But certainly is not the 60,000 gallon storage tank that you would expect in under the National Fire Code. And one problem we have is that the National Fire Code is envisioning quarter acre lots, you know, in a typical suburban type subdivision. And that's why Pete's totally right that we don't define building envelopes when we allow a subdivision. So you really can't address how far the hydrant will be from the building, since you don't know where the building will go or if there would even be a building on the lot if it's used for farming. But you can regulate how far in approving a subdivision, how far the hydrant is from the lot. I think that's why we ended up with the wording we have.
Great. All right. So in order to move forward, John, you'll take this to the town council. And let's see where they stand with it. And then, you know, I think all these points are really valid and important, but we sort of need to hear from them to see if what's the right track.
So just to summarize our planning discussion, okay.
Yes.
One concern is going to be the fact that the fire protection standards will affect the cost of future subdivisions and future construction.
Correct.
That was one concern. The concern about are we willing to strictly require something to be connected to Boulder Farmstead, or are we going to allow private water storage tanks and cisterns and things like that? That was the second one.
Correct.
What were the other major points? I wasn't taking notes in real time. So did somebody else catch anything else that we brought up?
Giving credit for building fire
fire protection within the house, sprinkler system, whatever they're building the house with, you know, giving them credit for doing that.
Okay, so we should capture the minutes and that is exactly what's in the Urban Wildland Interface Code. So yes, they tie into the construction standards in the Urban Interface Code. Anything else that, because I'll update my document based on the points raised here by planning. So
yeah, I think those are the two, three major things that we need to suss out for sure.
Okay, very good.
Thank you,
John. Can I just say that I don't think we should expect the town council to come up with a decision at that meeting. I think we should let them know as informational, and then I don't think they should be put on the spot at that meeting to make a decision.
No, I think you're right. I think what we're asking for is some direction from them on what their intention of raising this issue was.
Yeah.
Right.
It's more like a conceptual plan or something that might come to us, in other words. Yeah, I don't want to put them on the spot for a vote because we don't have any hard documentation for them. I just don't want to make a decision here in the PC, then start writing an ordinance that they're not interested in.
Yep, that's exactly, got it. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, any last comments on fire protection before we move on? Okay, great, thank you. So now we're gonna circle back around, and I think it's important that we start. Okay, so we're talking about all the housing issue and so on in order to create this open forum, open house for sometime in the fall for the community's input and to know, you know, really how to go forward. So there are a couple of things we need to do. I think we need to set a date for when that's going to be. And I think we need to delegate or have someone volunteer to sort of be like the, not the only, but at least the sort of responsible as the top sort of organizer for this. And then we can, who's willing to sort of manage that and put it together. And then we need to start figuring out speakers, how it's going to play out. And that's some of what I want to discuss right now. So let's start with dates. In my mind, at this point, we have an August meeting. We talked about after Labor Day. I think we really need a September meeting. And then I think maybe halfway between the September and October meeting, I'm looking at my calendar, sometime around there might be a date to do it. What do you all think? I'm thinking like September 22nd or something like that.
So is this going, this is a meeting that's going to include all of the options that we come up with and possibly even speakers? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, well, that's the details that we haven't got to. Because I don't know how much to, you know, how long a meeting is it going to be? How many people do we need to include? You know, where is it going to be? Can we deal with if COVID things are as they are or whatnot? Is it going to be a hybrid meeting? Like how we have to figure out how to handle all that. But right now, I'm committed to doing it, but I want to set a date first and then we can get into those details.
I would like to suggest after our October meeting.
Okay, so anyone else?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe sometime in November. I feel like September, October is really busy for everyone, but especially all the people working seasonally, trying to, you know, finish out the season well and everything. Those are the main people that we're trying to look at.
Okay, how about October 20th?
I vote November.
St. Peter's Day, or October 20th or 27th, a Thursday in between our typical planning commissions that doesn't also coincide with the town council meeting.
Okay. I really would suggest we think about November when the businesses are closed so people aren't not here because they're working.
I kind of agree with that. I mean, I will agree with that.
So give me some dates.
So the 3rd is the town council meeting. The 10th is our meeting.
Are we attached to it being Thursday?
I suppose not.
Yeah, I mean, it could be whenever, really. What's a good day of the week for people? I mean, I guess we'd want it to be a weekday for the speakers and staff. I don't know. November's my vote as far as specifics go. I don't really care.
We could do it the 17th.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Does that feel spacious enough to do this, to plan? I mean, at least so we just have a working date right now.
We could also talk to the, once we figure out who we'd like to come, this, like speakers or whatever, we could kind of propose a few dates to them, say, like decide on that week and see what works for people. If the date doesn't work, you know, like if we can get everybody on the 15th, but not the 17th, we could do that.
Well, I think the 17th also puts us far enough out that those speakers, I mean, I don't want to get into a scenario where we're adapting to 500 different people's schedules. I think we sort of need a firm date that we can align with and draw people to. 500 is a lot of people. It's not that many, but.
How many speakers are we thinking we'll have?
Well, you know, if it's anything like Tina was there, Colleen was there, you know, what I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago when we did the community forums, we did a series of them, but we had 40, 50 people at those sometimes. So people wanted to interact, and that's what we want, to be honest.
But I mean, in terms of the people, like the more like experts or whatever we'd be bringing in to talk.
I don't know. That's a different conversation. Like, what do we want to do at this meeting would be the next question I'd put to you.
Those were the people I meant in terms of picking a date. I don't mean like for the whole town. But if there's some, like if there are people we really want to try to get here to hear what they have to say, we might want to have a few dates available and try to pick the one that works through. Like, let's say
we've I think we're jumping ahead here, Elena. Right now, I just want to pin a date down, and then we need to decide the strategy of what's actually going to happen at this meeting. So let's put the 17th on the books for now, and let's talk about what needs to happen at this meeting that isn't too big a step, but not too little a step. As far as I see it right now, we've been talking about different strategies and proposals for ways to address the housing situation with a lot of research quite specifically. And these different trackways are important, I think, to introduce to the public to see what the feedback is. We might need a few experts to talk about something like what Tina brought up, such as a community land trust, something that's actually going on perhaps in Torrey, or how some of these housing funding projects are there. But we don't want to put all our time on these speakers so much as we want, what I think we want to get a feel of, you know, we present the, again, the pathways that the Planning Commission has sort of mapped out and see what the public thinks of that. Do they have different ones? Do they like the ones we're offering and so on? Those are my initial thoughts on it. What makes sense to you?
Well, I guess, you know, starting going backwards from our day, I would like to see some kind of publicized documentation for people to know kind of generally what we're actually going to work on. That would be something that would be prior to the meeting.
Yes. So. Definitely. So clear, concise, this is what we're doing here. This is what we're inviting you to, and so on.
Information.
And ideally, we'd have that put together at least a month before, right?
Okay.
So is anyone willing to take on like organizing this on some level, at least strategizing it forward to lead it for the planning commission?
I would like to have some help, but I will certainly put a major effort into this, but I think it should be a little bit of a shared effort, you know, because I want other people to feel that they've got a chance to shape the meeting. But I guess I'm stepping up to say I'll make sure I will do what's needed.
Yeah, I kind of see this as a more of a coordinating kind of position, and that everybody steps up for a specific part of that, but that somebody has, you know, is just there saying, or are you ready? Or what are the details that you have that need to be addressed? And then, and I'm happy to work with you, John, on that.
Okay, great. And I think part of it is going to be bringing some continuity from the 2018 work, because what we should be telling the people is we're not bringing this up for the first time. The community has done a lot of work on this. A lot of effort was spent on it. We want to build on it and move forward. It should be the flavor. So I would really appreciate your help in bringing the continuity from the 2018 housing that work.
Yeah, I'm happy to try and do that.
Yeah, and so I really appreciate you guys coordinating that. And I think every one of us on the commission should have a job in order to make that happen, to manifest it. So it's like if you to come up with sort of a strategy, and then we can all add in on and do the work to make it happen. You know, Lee's going to be important on this too. So,
in terms of goals, I think to me, it's a lot of it at this point should be community education and planning commission listening. More than, and the education should be more about what's possible rather than specific projects or specific ordinance changes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, it does make sense. And to me, I guess that's what I mean when I say pathways we could follow. We're just, providing that, possibilities. Okay, so is there more we want to talk about this tonight, or do we want to, so next meeting is the month of August, and, I guess we do need some backward sort of planning from November 17th backwards to make sure our goals are fulfilled and it happens. Is that part of how would that work?
Yeah, I missed a few words, but could you repeat that?
Yeah, so if for the August, we have a lot of business. I think we're going to have a lot of business on our plate for the August meeting with public business. But could we also, what I'd like to do is spend some time there, like making a timeline of what needs to happen for a November 17th. Public forum to happen? Like, who do we need to contact? What is it going to look like? And just sort of, and we can do our specific planning from there.
Certainly. Yep. And I'm going to see what help I can get from some of the people, like Dave Conine and who've been involved with this before. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the legalities are, but there's no reason we can't we can't have public interact in designing this as well, and that it might even be a great way to go. So
I mean, in effect, we'd be asking him to volunteer as a consultant to us.
Okay.
But yes, I think he'd. I think part of the key is going to be to bring in some expertise, some people who have some real knowledge of making these things happen. So I'll have a lot to work on this month.
Okay, I think it's also important to bring in some locals. So for example, seeing on the screen here, I know Dan and Jennifer have been working on it. I don't know, well, when we open up for public comment, I think it'd be valuable to reach out to people who are living here as well.
Yep, exactly.
Should we, our next meeting, each be brainstorming who we think might be good people to invite as the experts to the, and then kind of decide who those people are next meeting, because we'll need to reach out to them probably next month, maybe.
Definitely. And so, you know, I know Colleen's on a track of a few organizations that are dealing with things, and Tina's on the community land trust. So like, yeah, so Elena, I think that's valuable. Like, yeah, a pool of people we might choose from depending on availability and what we want would be valuable to have.
Okay, so maybe we'll each kind of brainstorm this month and then try to land on like a dream team next month.
Yeah. Okay, so let's wrap this discussion up unless there are any other comments, and then
I just had that for a while. I don't know if we want
to. Sorry, I missed that.
Peg's had her hand up on Zoom for a little while. Peg, did you mean to do that? Do you want to?
Yeah, but I can wait till the public comments if you want. It is related to this discussion and some things maybe to consider. What do you want?
Okay. Well, why don't we do our final public comments now, and then we'll go into upcoming business after that. So I'll open the floor for public comments. On anything we've discussed today would be great.
Is there anyone still in the room with you right now? So all we have are Zoom people. I don't see any other hands up than mine. Right now, my hand is up.
I guess we bored everybody to death.
I guess so. Okay, I'm going to talk.
I want to talk as well.
Okay. There were a couple of considerations that I just wanted to make sure you were keeping in mind. I know that when Carla was doing the community forums, there were several planning work sessions that happened before those even took place. And as you recall, the community sessions themselves occurred over a winter time. And depending on the group, there were between 2, 3, sometimes 4 meetings of those individual groups. But it took a few planning sessions to even get there. So I guess what I'm saying is consider when you're plugging in dates, consider some work meetings that have nothing to do with the normal schedule of your meetings. And also one other item is, I just want to mention Colleen did want to work on strategizing how to do the forum, so keep her in mind. And the other thing I wanted to mention was to keep in mind that you've kind of, well, I'm not sure if you've made the decision or not, but talking about zoning changes, pretty much any major zoning changes are being put off until after the conclusion and of the community forums and the outgrowth of all that stuff. So you're really pushing things out a ways into the next new year. And as busy as September and October are around here, as soon as you hit the holiday season, you run into major conflicts with that. People start traveling and are out of town during, you know, the middle of the winter. So there's never a perfect time. I would suggest sooner than later getting started, at least with work meetings.
Agreed. Thank you, Peg.
And let's see, Jennifer and Jen. Jennifer and Dan also have their hands up.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. We just want to, you know, both of us are here listening, and we want to thank you so much for making the housing and doing all that as a major priority. We love to see that you are putting at the top of your agenda and putting so much energy and thought and time into it. So thank you very much as community members for doing that. We think it's really important. And obviously, because we're interested in this topic, if it turns out that anyway, if we're happy to help in any way, if you choose or decide that you would like our help, we'd be happy to be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. I think we'll take you up on that offer.
Jen's here, has a comment.
Who is that?
Jen Bach. Okay. I'm curious, and I just really don't know the answer. But when things like the white paper presentation about the housing and the fire and stuff are presented in meetings like this, could it be posted somewhere that we could see it like on our devices or whatever instead of relying on the screen up there? Is that something that is reasonable to ask or possible to incorporate?
Oh, I know.
So that we, yeah, like if it's something that's actually presented, I understand like if people are communicating and coming to something, but when it's like a presentation, is that something reasonable to ask to be shared to the public, even if it's not for public, like public hearing, like just so that we have references to look at and understand it more thoroughly than just like, oh, hey, there it's on screen.
That seems reasonable.
I'm not able to hear any of that. I just heard
Sorry, I'll project better. I'm requesting or wondering if it's possible to share presented documents such as the white paper discussions on things when they're for the meetings onto the website somehow.
Yes.
Where we can look at them, because I feel like it was just sudden that it was on the screen and I wasn't able to look at it ahead of time or in my device. So
yes. The answer to that is yes. This was an anomaly that I did not get those in meeting materials up on the website before the meeting, and I apologize.
Thanks, Meg.
Good.
Yes. Great.
Any other public comments?
Don't see any.
All right. We're counting down and let's move on to August.
I'm sorry.
Oh. Let's see.
No, that's just that. Okay. What's the one up from that?
Are we waiting on someone?
I'm just looking at the chat.
I think that's what we're waiting for. Oh,
Donna Owen had earlier said construction standards don't help a subdivider who has to put infrastructure in before being approved and before selling.
I think that it's not that, I don't think the infrastructure necessarily has to be, infrastructure has to be put in before the subdivision is approved. Is that correct? Am I not? I mean,
that, yes, that's my understanding right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Donna has her hand up again. Are you still taking public comments?
Yes.
Sure. Okay. Donna.
Okay. So, my understanding, since I'm now taking over for Kelly Cochran, who had an emergency and can't help with our subdivision, we do have to mark where all our hydrants are going, mark where all our septic is going, get approval from the water company, which means we have to tell them what we want before you will even look at our final. So all of this, like, well, putting a hydrant in based on building standards, it's like way down the line. So any consideration you can put in to make the process easier for someone to know specifically to do what's right and how to get it done so it could actually get up to you guys so you can talk about it. I mean, we can't even hardly get our, we're having a lot of trouble, chicken and egg stuff. Well, you have to have this done first, but no, you have to have that done first, but we both have to see this before we can sign off. And we, anyway, I was just saying, because construction standards were being mentioned as far as fire hydrants, it's really sort of irrelevant unless we can put in the fire hydrants after we're approved, which I don't think we can, because I think they have to be marked on a plat or something like that. Isn't that correct? That's my comment anyway. I'm sorry. I know you're not going to answer questions, but those are my thoughts now. Thank you.
Thank you. Got it, Donna. We hear that. Thank you.
I think just the plans, right, need to be clear.
I mean, I know what's required on our end in the ordinances and through the zoning administrator, but I don't know how that matches up with what's required by, you know, like Boulder Farmstead or whatever on the other side. So, we can look into that to see if it needs to be smoother somehow, but, you know, it's pretty straightforward on our end, is that's actually the zoning administrator has the preliminary checklist and we're waiting on that. And at this point, legally, we can't do anything about it, but I hear that the process seems sort of chicken and egg as well. So we'll look into it. Okay, any other public comments? Okay, let's go to upcoming business for the August meeting. Let's see, so we may have two subdivisions on the table, is that right, Peg?
Yes, at this point, we have both Deer Ranch wants to be ready to present their preliminary, as well as Fogle Fuller.
Okay, does that mean we need to have public hearings for both of those?
We definitely need a public hearing for the Deer Ranch. We haven't had that yet. We've had some kind of a public hearing already, as I recall, for Fogle Fuller.
Yeah.
Depending on if they've changed a lot, we should have another public hearing, but I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if there's any change.
Okay. So possibility is that we'll check with April and then figure out if we need a second public hearing for that. And in order to do a public hearing, we need 10 days notice, right?
I need 10 days notice, which means any preliminary work to me seeing the paperwork is before that. So yes.
Okay, so for Deer Ranch and for Fogle subdivision, that let's make sure that they know that their paperwork needs to be in that far in advance so we can set a public hearing. Yep. Okay, thank you. So those two, let's see. John will probably be reporting on his meeting with the town council about fire protection direction. Let's see, then I think what I'd like to have Lee report in with some more detailed information on performance standards for clustering or housing. What else did we have in that list for Lee?
You had wanted him to talk about deed restrictions?
Yes, deed restrictions. Thank you. I can't read my own writing. My glasses. And possible like community housing projects that are actually happening that he knows about it, or funding, I think would be good.
Okay. Like funding sources, is that what you mean?
Possible funding sources. And then Elena was gonna do a little research on that as well. Am I correct there, Elena?
Say that again on what?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Say that again on what?
What were you going to follow out?
I don't know. I missed what you said. I don't know what you're saying.
You said that you were going to follow, I think, either like the law, the vacant housing thing out. I can't remember what you said. You're going to do a project. I'm just trying to focus on what that was for, so we can hear about it next meeting.
Okay. Yeah, maybe just, I mean, the only thing I'm thinking of is kind of each bring some names to the table next time.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you said, Elena. Could you repeat that?
The only thing I have down that I'm doing for next time is just that we're all kind of bringing a few names to the table for who might be good at the forum. If there's something else that we said I'd do, let me know, but that's all.
Oh.
Okay.
Got it.
Then we'll spend a little time on, I guess that can go under that, but organizing for the open forum, open house. See, I don't even know what to call it. Anything else that needs to be on the table for next month?
Let's plan work meetings too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And that can be under the last topic as a part of the discussion.
And so we could have a work meeting possibly with Lee, is that correct?
Yeah. Depending on his schedule, I don't know that. We can ask.
Sure.
Keep in mind, a work meeting still is a public meeting, but you're not doing any business. You're not taking votes. It's just clearly a work meeting. So.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I think that's it. Thank you for your time, your focus, and your comments, both public and commissioners. I think we're getting there, and I hope everyone has a great evening. So I'll make a motion to close the meeting.
I'll second it, Tina.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Glenn Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Dolly Price Gibson, aye.
Don, aye.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Peg.
You're welcome. Thank you.